Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. We love having you here, Ken. That's not even a play on words. We really think it's terrific. So welcome back.
Good to be back.
So I want to ask you straight out, what's going on between the governor and the mayor of New York City? I have not been able to figure that one out. The harder Cuomo hits de Blasio, the more that de Blasio seems to take it. Am I wrong about that?
No, they're great friends. Don't you know that? They will tell you that at every turn.
Yeah, they hug
pals.
Each other. They hug each other a lot.
No, look, I'll admit I was duped into it. I thought it would be a different relationship given their background, given their longtime relationship. But the governor right off the bat last year went right after him on issues of
Charter schools,
pre-kindergarten, and other issues, and really went hard at him. De Blasio, however, knows, as mad as the mayor may have been privately, he needs the state for a lot of things. He needs the state for permission for funding for pre-kindergarten, all the things he wants to do, even those that he won't get. So he's really gone out of his way from his end to avoid hitting back at Cuomo publicly, knowing it would do him no good, that the governor, it would just make the governor dig in more on other issues, and it would really sour the relationship. So, you know, we saw that the mayor helped the governor in his time of need in the fight with the Working Families Party when it looked like the Working Families Party may snub the governor's and give their endorsement nomination to Zephyr Teachout. And the mayor got involved and helped orchestrate it so that a deal was cut for the governor. He's helped the governor on other things throughout the year. And, you know, you wonder what he's getting in return. We'll see, I guess, in the coming year.
Well, maybe he's just not getting killed.
And really, you know, the governor has had ample opportunity now with the police situation to embarrass the governor, the mayor.
Yeah.
And has not yet done that.
Well, so. I think in a way, if you're good at reading the tea leaves, which I know you are, and you listen to the remarkable eulogy that the governor gave about his father, Mario, upon his death, there was some lineage in there in which the governor said, you know, the police and the people who are critical of the police have to get along better together. They have to make up. I thought that was a shot at the mayor, if you think about it, because he had to go a little extra to get there. But here's the mayor with these cops standing up, turning their backs on the civil authority, and instead of the governor being there for him, he takes what I considered to be a fairly, you know, cheap shot and say, why don't you all get along, as opposed to doing the right thing. The right thing would have been to support the mayor.
Well, the governor has used that line really since this controversy and controversies have begun last year, that he thinks both sides. He's been very, while the mayor's been at war with Pat Lynch, the head of the NYPD Police Benevolent Association, the union leader, you know, Pat Lynch basically claimed that the blood of the two police officers who were assassinated in the city was on the mayor's hands. And, you know, the governor came on later and said, well, you know, I know he's a guy from Queens. He gets emotional, but I don't think he necessarily meant it. And, you know, he's called for all sides to get along. He certainly has tried to play the middle. He's tried to be the statesman, so to speak, urging all sides to get along without seemingly publicly taking sides.
Yeah, but at whose expense? I mean, in this case, what I just posited is at the mayor's expense.
Well, he hasn't thrown a lifeline to him, certainly. You know, he's defended him on certain things, but he certainly has not thrown a lifeline to the mayor. But, you know, I think he's seeing himself in the middle right now because he may come in. He's also going to push legislation, which we're going to find out next week exactly perhaps what it is. But, you know, to reform the criminal justice system and to also do some police safety issues. So we'll see where it comes out on that.
We had Chris Gibson, the very popular congressman who just won re-election in, you know, a very competitive district here the other day. And it sure sounded to our producer, David Gustina, and to me like the guy was running for governor, and he's announced that he'll do this congressional term, but after that, he won't. And he made no bones about the fact that he would consider running for statewide office. And when you talk to him, that statewide office began to sound like running for governor.
I agree. And I think that one of the reasons he announced so early that he was going to retire at the end of this term, you know, he hasn't even started the term, he just started it when he announced it, I believe is he's getting ready to take votes that will be unpopular with his leadership, with the Republicans in Congress. He's already voted against John Boehner for, leader. And I think that you'll see on certain issues that the Republicans vote for, knowing it would probably hurt him in a statewide run here in New York, he's going to vote against it. And by saying he's not going to run again, there's not much you can do with him. You know, there's not much the leadership can punish him.
But they can put him down in the basement.
They can put him in the basement. But okay, so he does that for 2 years. But he's going to, his record now will be a statewide New York record. That's my feeling anyway.
Yeah, sure. I absolutely agree with you. So that leads to the next question. Can he win?
Well, look, you know, he's going to be an interesting candidate. He's got a military background. He's from upstate. You know, he's obviously not well-known statewide, but he's going to give himself time to do that. A key difference between him and someone like Rob Astorino is he's got a pro-choice view, at least in the first trimester, and he has come out against hydrofracking, which polls show is unpopular in New York. So he, in that way, if you're looking to make inroads in New York City in particular, being a pro-choice, anti-fracking Republican gives you a step in the right direction.
But then, of course, to say that, we would have to examine another proposition, and that is, I keep hearing, I don't know about you, you've got your ear close to the ground, that Andrew Cuomo will not run for a third term as governor, or may not run for a third term as governor. My feeling is, if the trajectory continues where Andrew Cuomo, who says that he's not the same old get-even guy, although I have my doubts about that, but if Andrew Cuomo would continue on the same trajectory, he got 1 million votes less this time than last time, he gets 1 million votes next time than this time, he could be vulnerable.
I think he can be vulnerable. I personally don't think he'll run again, obviously. 4 years is a long way to go, but I think he knows that for his father, who was three terms and lost running for a fourth, for George Pataki, who was a three-termer, for Michael Bloomberg, a third
term. Yeah, but they were third termers.
But what I'm saying is a third term is a hard proposition. It doesn't go well often. I think he knows that, so I'm not sure he would run. Especially, you know, it works out for him if he decides to run for president in 2020, assuming that a Republican would be in office, because if a Democrat wins in 2016, then he's out in 2020, Cuomo. But if that's the case, he comes out of office. His term now expires in 2018, which gives him 2 years to mount a campaign if he's still interested in running for president at the time.
Yeah, and maybe even to take a few speech lessons. So,
although I'll tell you, during the funeral, he told a story about a debate he had with his father over his father believed in reading speeches word for word in the text. And Andrew Cuomo said, oh, I like to gauge the audience reaction and adjust accordingly. And his father said, no, a speech should be about what you want the audience to hear, not what they want to hear. And I will tell you, his two speeches that he's read word for word was the eulogy and his inauguration speech this year. And they are two of the best speeches I saw Andrew Cuomo give as governor. Mm-hmm. So maybe his father was right on that one, and maybe we'll see more of that from the governor.
Well, I have to tell you, Ken Lovett, for 18 years I had a weekly radio show with Mario Cuomo, as you know. And I got to tell you, he wasn't a guy who had to read everything from, you know, every word for anything. He was so extemporaneous. He loved to argue so much. You see, I have a take on this, which is that I think that the speech was superb, as you do. The eulogy was superb. But I think there are two Andrews. Look, he's made no secret about it. When he wrote his book, he said, there was the old Andrew. I'm not the old Andrew anymore. I'm the new Andrew. I don't go after people. I don't, you know, I don't do that. I have my issues, my doubts about that, as I've said, but it's going to be very interesting because now he's replacing his closest advisors, or they're leaving or bailing out either way, with more professional apparatchiks, not the kinds of people like Larry Schwartz who makes an enemy just for the sake of making an enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he named his secretary to the governor, Bill Mulrow, who's been around politics, Democratic politics, a long time, but he's also a private businessman. He's a banker. Mulrow has a much different personality. And I think going in, The governor knew that this was going to be a tough term in terms of his dealings with the legislature. His own poll numbers are down. They're tired of what you might call his type A personality. It's grated on them for 4 years. He's beat them down. And I think now another couple of years of Larry Schwartz may have been tough. I think the legislature is happy to see someone new in that position and someone, at least for now, they think has an even keel personality that they can deal more with.
So where would you put Shelley Silver right now in terms of his own personal vulnerability? All of a sudden, there's a story, you'll tell us about it, that he didn't disclose everything he should have about his outside income. Whether or not there's a crime involved in this, I don't know, but perhaps you could talk about that.
Well, yeah, it's been reported that the speaker had been making money from a law firm from New York City. We always knew he made money from Whites and Luxembourg, which is a major trial law firm. And, you know, this past year he made something like up to $650,000 or $750,000 in outside income, including from Whites and Luxembourg. But we didn't know about this other law firm from New York City. That suddenly popped up. It's never been disclosed. Now, there could be reasons not. Maybe he's not working for them per se. Maybe they're quote-unquote clients. It's a fee-for-service kind of thing. We don't know any of this. The speaker has refused to talk about it because Preparara, the U.S. attorney, is looking into it. The speaker won't divulge what his interest is with this law firm, how the agreement is. But it doesn't look good. But whether that's a federal crime, I don't know. And whether Preparara is looking into anything else, we know that he's looked into other things with the speaker, never come up with anything. So obviously, the speaker's a hot topic for this for the U.S. Attorney's Office. And, you know, who knows what they have. I think that's going to be the most significant threat facing Shelley Silver. He just won re-election as speaker with, you know, all but one Democrat voted for him, all but two Democrats, I should say. And I just think for him, you know, he's strong within his conference. There's no heir apparent, which is something he's made sure of since he was almost toppled about a decade ago. And I think that he'll go on as long as he can, you know, as long as there's not an indictment dropped on him.
What would you do if you were the Republican conference in the New York State Senate right now? They won an outright victory. They have enough people, but they have some very old people in their conference, and they have a huge election coming up. Assuming Hillary Clinton runs for office, she's going to bring a lot of people with her. So if you were the Republican leadership, what would you do?
Well, I mean, they are going to govern the way they've been governing. I think for them, especially looking upstate, they're going to focus a lot on economic issues, taxation issues. I think you'll see a lot more quote-unquote Republican issues that they're not going to kowtow to the governor anymore, you know, when it comes to the liberal agenda. We really saw the end of that after they passed the SAFE Act, the gun control law that the governor pushed through. You really saw them, because of a backlash of their own base, say, you know what, enough is enough. We can't do this stuff anymore. So issues like abortion and, you know, campaign finance reforms and things like that, I think, are going to be scuttled for the next 2 years. But what they have done, and which is not a surprise, is they've re-upped with the five independent Democrats, the so-called Independent Democratic Conference, which are these five breakaway Dems who, for the last 2 years, controlled the chamber with them. And where the five Dems were able to block legislation from coming to the floor, their leader, Jeff Klein, was the co-president. Because the Republicans now have a full majority, it's not quite that kind of arrangement anymore. The Democrats don't have the power they had the last time, but they're in the fold, and I think they're hoping that they'll continue to be in the fold. That's their insurance policy.
But Klein will not be the co-leader anymore.
Klein is not the co-leader. Klein, I had in my column this week that Klein won't even be in the room for the budget negotiations, right, which is something that was a big deal to him. The governor will only deal with the leaders, because if he lets Klein in now, who doesn't have any power really, then why not let the other minority leaders in, like Andrea Stewart-Cousins, the Senate Democratic leader, or the Assembly Republican leader, Brian Kolb?
Why not? Why not indeed?
Well, that is a good question, but the governor doesn't do that. They don't make the decisions in the houses.
So I guess, Ken Lovett, that I just want to know whether or not you see the balance of power in New York State in flux. You mentioned the Democrats. We know that the Democrats in the state Senate have never known how to behave themselves, never known how to organize. We call them a circular firing squad. Is there any sense on your part that they're getting any better?
Yeah, I think a lot of the issues that we have seen and what we talked about or what you just mentioned, well, you know, the leadership was a lot different back then. You had Malcolm Smith, who was actually, you know, there's a trial about him now for corruption charges.
Well, he already beat it. He sort of beat it. It was a hung jury.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a hung, it was a mistrial.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're in the case right now. You've got John Sampson, who's under indictment. He was a leader. So you have, like, you know, it was a bad, you had Charlie Huntley, who was there, who went to jail. You had Mahira Montserrat, who went to jail. So you don't seem to have those controversies now. You don't seem to have people spouting. You don't have the rank and file spouting off like they were. I think Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Mike Gianaris have been better leadership than we've seen. But until they're in the majority, if they're ever in the majority, we don't know until they have the power and the role to play.
So I guess I want to ask you about my favorite story of the year. Do you mind?
No.
Okay.
Last year or this year?
this year, right now, George Pataki has been showing up in New Hampshire, campaigning coatless, 70-year-old man, coatless, the symbol of virility, campaigning so that he, we think, thinks he should be president of the United States. I mean, is somebody putting lithium in the water or what?
It's like a political Groundhog's Day. Every 4 years, George Pataki pops back up and says he may run for president. The first two times since leaving office, he didn't actually take the plunge. Honestly, this time, you know, I don't give him much of a chance. I don't think a lot of people do. But
he was governor three times.
But he was governor three terms, but a long time ago. But if he is going to do it, this is it. Because as you said, he's 69 years old. So I think he's really giving it serious thought, knowing he wants to be part of the conversation. And no one really thinks he has a shot at it. There's a lot of bigger names, more popular names.
Oh, sure.
And forgetting even policy issues that would hurt him. But he knows it's now or never to at least think about it.
Well, it's ridiculous. But maybe he's smarter than we think, because he's not a dumb man. Maybe he wants to be vice president, and this is a good way of doing it.
But even then, I mean, yeah, the people have said vice president or maybe a cabinet position that, or maybe, you know, he wants to help his business and just keep up, you know, the being a public image. You know, this gets him on TV. He does do cable news shows now, and he does things like that.
Anybody know who he is? I mean, the two times I think that he had a presence were when Andrew Cuomo accused him of doing nothing more than holding Rudy Giuliani's coat, which I think subsequently apologized for, and also when he was driving in his car, he was being driven and was hit by a frozen turkey truck.
Yeah, but look, I mean, it's easy to poke fun, but the truth is he's a Republican who got elected three times in heavily Democratic New York, so I don't think you can dismiss that. Whether he could do it, you know, look, I mean, Rudy Giuliani was much more popular, much more known, and he had no chance nationally, and I don't think George Pataki does, but look, you know, it's free country. Weird things happen sometimes.
They do. Talk to me, Ken Lovett, about education. I'm getting a lot of mail from teachers who are furious at Andrew Cuomo. Are they right?
Are they right? Well, I don't know if I could say they're right or wrong, but they are furious at Andrew Cuomo. They feel that his pushing of charter schools, which he's going to push this year for more, his pushing for tougher teacher evaluations.
Did he say something? So I'm getting all this mail now. It's an organized
thing. Public monopoly.
The public monopoly. He called education the last public monopoly, yes. And that was offensive to many teachers.
Yes.
No, but did he say something about that some of the teachers were pedophiles? I'm getting all this mail, unorganized mail, because he said something, I think NPR played it.
I believe he said something about trying to get people out of being able to get people out of the classroom. He wants tougher standards.
But did he use the pedophile word or a P word?
I think he might have used the pedophile, but I don't think he said all teachers are pedophiles.
No, that would be no. I don't think he did that either.
But look, we had a rally here in Albany this week of educators and teacher unions and kids. And, you know, they feel the real issue. And this is going to be the fault line this year. They say all the talk about charter schools, all the talk about reforming the Board of Regents, all the talk about teacher evaluations is really not the issue in terms of fixing education. They feel the real issue is a problem of funding inequity for really poor districts, that poor districts spend far less money per student than rich districts, and they say the problem has worsened under Andrew Cuomo, and they'd like to hear him talk more about that. He did raise the issue, interestingly enough, during his inauguration. But for them, the issue is more money. And for the governor, his argument has consistently been, we already spend the most amount of money on school aid of any state, and we have middling results, and so money isn't the only answer. So that's where the battle's going to be. You're going to hear fights over charter schools. You're going to hear it over teacher evaluations this year. You're going to hear it over perhaps a tax credit for private, you know, people who send their kids to private schools.
Ken Lovett, does Shelley Silver have the, what's the right word, cojones, to take on the governor over some of these issues, because the assembly is very close to the teachers union?
Yeah, I think he you know, look, I don't think you'll see a lifting of the charter cap. I think in the end, you'll probably see the number of charters allowed go up, but you won't see a total lifting of the cap. I think there will probably be tougher teacher evaluations, but it'll be not as strong as the governor probably wants. And I know the governor wants to change the way the Board of Regents, which oversees the education system in the state, how they're appointed, because right now, basically, Shelley Silver and the Assembly Democrats control the process, and the governor, like Spitzer before him, like Cuomo, Mario Cuomo before him, George Pataki before him, wants control of that process. I don't think you'll see that happen. I think the speaker will block that entirely.
Casinos. We only have a couple of minutes, but the governor, who angered some people in what we call the southern tier, the Binghamton region, over fracking, by saying no fracking, has talked about maybe they should have a casino after all.
Yeah, that was a huge flip-flop. I mean, you talk about, and a quick one, you know, 9 or 10 days before he announced that he would like to see this casino siting committee reconsider giving one to the southern tier. He had said to the press, well, I don't think a casino would work in the southern tier, and I will abide by the decision of the casino siting board. Well, the casino siting board only picked 3 out of the 4. They were allowed to pick up to 4. They said, we think 3 is enough. We don't want to oversaturate the market, and we don't think it would work in the southern tier. Then the governor got a lot of criticism because not only did he did they not give a casino to the southern tier, but he blocked hydrofracking, which was big in the southern tier. And lo and behold, 9 days after that and after the criticism, he writes a letter saying, maybe you should reconsider that. And even though he had said he had no say over the committee and he wasn't involving himself, all of a sudden he got involved and asked him to look at it, which is something they're going to reconsider this week.
Andrew Cuomo, the last question is, Andrew Cuomo has not shown himself to be somebody who enjoys, as his pop did, big press conferences and answering and goes on, you know, maybe somebody's radio station that nobody's ever heard of, and the reporters listen, and then they can't ask questions because that's the way it is. So I'm wondering, is there a new Andrew possibly coming based on what we see after the great eulogy in which he sort of talked about himself?
Now, what do they say? You can't teach an old dog new tricks? I think
Freud said you can't teach anybody after 4 years old.
I mean, the reality is Andrew Cuomo, when he does hold a press conference, and they're usually not formal press conferences, he'll have a cabinet meeting. But when he does it, he's very good. He'll take all the questions you shoot at him, so you can get him for an hour, and he'll answer the questions, whether you like the answers or not. But the problem is they're so few and far between these days. You know, during the session, hopefully we'll have a few more. But I think he's going to stick to that. I think he'd rather go and avoid the Legislative Correspondents Association because they hit him hardest, and go into local communities where he's treated like royalty because the governor comes and, you know, he doesn't get asked a ton of questions, and then he goes.
And that's it for the Capital Connection and our friend Ken Lovett. We're out of time. Our guest has been columnist and Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, as always, we thank you so much. You are straight from the shoulder. You tell us the way it is, and we appreciate it. That's the Capital Connection this week.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Thank you.